Hello, 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 and welcome back again from a long, long absence. This is the roundup on Geeks of Doom. I am Andy Cercini, otherwise known as Mr. Babyman amongst my social media circles, and I'm here with Greg Davies, who is known as CGT2099 amongst his social media circles. Of course, it hasn't been a long time for listeners on Geeks of Doom for hearing Greg Davies, because he's been hosting the TARDIS blend all up and until this time. So how have you been, Greg?
What is this? What is the show? What are we doing? What is this? Can you remind? No, that's it. I've been good, mate. I've been very good. And TARDIS blend has been going very well at geeksofdoom.com. We're getting some feedback from the listeners at the site, which is always good. Mm-hmm. Interesting half season, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
For Whovians this year, with first of all, the format being a little different with all standalone episodes. And then secondly, I don't think I have ever seen Doctor Who fans more divisive about a season than ever before. There doesn't seem to be a, a dominant positive feedback or negative feedback. It seems to be pretty even across the board. There seems to be an even amount of fans that have liked the season and an even amount of fans who haven't liked it. So,
can I ask you a question before we really jump into our own roundup topics? I want to ask you a Doctor Who related question here. Mm-hmm. What is the deal with, because the first episode back in this new season, we got introduced to the Doctor's new companion, but then it wasn't, and then we haven't seen her since. What's the deal with that?
Well, the deal is we're going to find out all the answers to that in the Christmas special this year, which at present the BBC haven't applied an official title to it, but the unofficial working title was The Snowman. So she's going to be in that. Now, the real question that fans are debating is how does Oswin, as we saw in the mm-hmm. Dalek episode, connect to Clara Oswin that we will meet as the new companion
yes.
in the Christmas special? And there's a variety of opinions going around. The most popular ones are, well, Stephen Moffat's going to do a River Song thing again, where the Doctor meets his companion at the end of her life and then reverse. I can't see him doing that. We've already gone through that whole long, mysterious search on what the hell River Song was all about and mm-hmm. how she fit into the Doctor's life and all that. I can't see him trying to pull that off again. So the other theory is that the Clara Oswin he's going to meet, which the next episode is set in Victorian times, mm-hmm. I think, that the companion is an ancestor of the Oswin we saw in the Dalek episode,
which
is possible. My theory is that it's one and the same. It's the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And my theory is that now the key thing to remember, or two key things to remember, in the first episode of the season, we were introduced to the Stephen Moffat, I'm going to rip off Battlestar Galactica and make human Daleks, like human-looking Cylons.
Mm-hmm.
There was that factor, and there was also the factor that because Oswin had retained her humanity,
yeah.
within being a converted Dalek, she was able to hack into things within the Dalek networks and was able to be very clever to help resolve the issues for the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So my theory is that before the planet exploded, she was clever enough to hack into the Dalek systems and recreate herself using the nanobots as a humanoid Dalek and got off the planet, and she's been searching for the Doctor through time and space ever since. And they cross paths again in the Christmas special. That's my theory.
So what you're suggesting is that the Doctor's new companion could actually be a Dalek in humanoid form. That would be a first for
yes,
Doctor
correct.
Who in his, historically for him to have a Dalek companion. That just blows my mind.
Well, correct. And the reason I'm leaning towards that as the most likely is because Stephen Moffat has so far had a penchant for introducing companions with a difference. Let me go through the history for you. He introduced Captain Jack Harkness. He introduced Sally Sparrow. He introduced Riversong.
Sure.
He introduced Rory Williams, the first male companion to remain in the TARDIS for an extended period of time. And so it stands to reason that he is going to introduce something different about this new companion. At least that's partially my hope as well, because he has been highly criticized among the Whovian circles for not being able to write women characters to save his life. I disagree with that criticism, but it does stand to be a popular criticism among Whovian fans. But that's where I think we're going. That's my two cents, my prediction, and we'll see how we go. But let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What did you didn't get a chance to be on with us on the TARDIS.
No, I did not, unfortunately.
So we'll organize something like for the next season and stuff. But what were your thoughts on this half season so far?
All around good episodes, I thought. I was really kind of saddened by the how the pawns went away. I don't necessarily want to say too much about that for people who haven't seen the episodes, but it seems like a very final sort of goodbye for them. Of course, anything's possible within the Doctor Who universe, but my wife reminded me that there is something about the Doctor not being able to return back to timelines that are, I can't remember what it was that she said, but there's definitely a possibility that the Doctor could not possibly return back to that timeline that the pawns ended up at. So
time can be rewritten, of course, and I would remind you and our listeners that you know, when Rose Tyler was removed from the series, with extreme finality, I might mind you,
being, I actually haven't seen that yet, universe. So
That's the farewell episode is it's at the end of the second series. And they are separated with quite a bit of finality. But she still comes back. So you never know what Moffat may have up his sleeve. I mean, the 50th anniversary is next year. You know, there's all kinds of talk about who's going to be in it, what's going to be in it. Expectations are running high. So I guess we'll just wait and see. Karen Gillan has said that she has no plans to come back. So I don't know how much you want to read into that, but...
Well, I think, to be honest, I mean, this is a terrific kickoff for her career, and she could probably go on to do just about anything she wants to from this point.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, fingers crossed. She had performed in a couple of UK-based films, one of which I can't recall the name of, but it's on Netflix, but she was in that. She's had, like, a bit of a cameo appearance in that.
I'd love to see her in some... U.S. stuff. I don't know if she can pull off an American accent, but
does she have to, though? I mean,
no. But notoriously, traditionally, a lot of UK actors, when they come over to the U.S. to do U.S. properties, a lot of them change their accents to fit in with the local show, whatever the show is,
right.
So, no, she doesn't have to. But then if she doesn't, then whatever character has to be written to accommodate the fact that she's from Scotland.
Or the UK in general. Yeah. I mean, whatever works. I mean, I would like to see her blossom from here and not be kind of typecast as the Doctor's companion.
So tell us what you've got on your plate here for movies, for movie previews.
Well, it's nothing grand. It's nothing huge. It's just a teaser trailer, so it's got a little bit of audio. You will not hear any audio from the title character in this, and I highly recommend people actually go to the Geeks of Doom article and watch the trailer, because we'll have the link to that in the show notes. But the Stephen King story, Carrie,
mm-hmm.
is being made into another movie. And it's going to be, from what I've read, a closer adaptation to
the book,
the film, the actual book, rather than a remake of the film with Sissy Spacek. So, mm-hmm. The coolest thing about this, though, is it has Chloe Grace Moretz in it as the title character, as Carrie, and she has a whole bunch of acting weight behind her as a young actress. She is absolutely brilliant in my mind, and I think she would be perfect for the role of Carrie. I think this is casting done right. Julianne Moore is in it as well as
Piper Laurie role as her mother.
Yes, which is a good piece of casting as well. Now, I'm really interested in seeing how they're going to try and put this movie together, because mm-hmm. If you've ever read the novel, sure. Which was Stephen King's debut novel, mm-hmm. as under the pen title Stephen King, it's not actually a narrative from start to finish. Stephen King tells the story through faked newspaper clippings and news reports and stuff like that. That's how he tells the story. There's no narrative in mm-hmm. the book, which that writing format would actually work well in what people currently call the found footage
format
of movies. So I'm not sure exactly how they're going to make this film, because the trailer doesn't actually give us any idea as to how it's going to result on screen. Because visually it looks like similar to the original movie, but the sound bites that they've included in the teaser trailer remind me very much of people like being interviewed after the fact, mm-hmm. and things like that. So it does kind of feel like they're maybe going towards that. Anyway, it's being directed by Kimberly Pierce. She was probably well known for the movie Stop Loss. She also directed Boys Don't Cry in 1999. Mm-hmm. So
she's got a lot of sensitivity towards the feminine perspective of things.
I would agree with that assessment, yeah. So I think we're going to see a lot of this, that injected into the film. But at the same time, I think one of the things that seems to be a bit of a meme that's ongoing in the media and on the internet at the moment is bullying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think that's going to be a big factor here in this particular story as well. So I guess we're going to see some modern sensitivities injected into it as well. So I guess we'll see how it goes. But anyway, to cut me off from rambling too much more, Andy's going to go ahead and play the audio from the trailer. It's very short. I highly encourage you check it out, horror fans and Stephen King fans. This is to satiate your appetite just a touch. Carrie.
This was always such a peaceful town.
I don't want to use the word conspiracy, but that's what it's looking like.
Her mother was a fanatic. I don't know how she lived with her.
There's something supernatural happening here that defies logic and explanation.
There's one thing no one seems to understand. She wasn't some monster. She was just a girl.
Now, let me ask you a question. Do you? And this is something that I've kind of thought about for a long time now, and this latest movie here kind of re-cements my my idea about this, is that it feels to me like pretty much throughout her career, Chloe Moretz has been cast in roles that are fairly brutal portrayals and fairly that ask her to like stretch beyond her roles that are normally associated with children. And I'm talking about like from the very beginning, even one of her earliest roles, 500 Days of Summer, she played a kid who was very kind of precocious and sassy for her age. And then you have Let the Right One In, or Let Me In, and Kick-Ass, and her role in Dark Shadows. She played kind of a spoiler alert here. She played kind of a monster. She's constantly playing roles that seem like. Like, you know, like my big question is I wonder, and this is just a theoretical because I don't think either of us could answer this question. Only she could answer this question. Is I wonder how playing these kind of roles affects her, if she's able to divide her, compartmentalize her real life with these kind of monstrous roles that she plays. You know?
Well, let me put it to you this way. One of the famous examples that people can think of is Linda Blair,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
from The Exorcist, who played a possessed little girl possessed by the demon Pazuzu, sure. in The Exorcist. And she did have a run-through with drugs and all kinds of things because she was having difficulty with resolving that compartmentalization right. that you're talking about. But at the same time, let's jump into modern times and have a look at someone who, in her early teenage years, played a lot of those Disney-fied, innocent, this is one's for the girls kind of movies. God, what's her name? Escaping me.
You're talking about...
Lindsay Lohan.
Yep.
Look at her now.
Yeah, she's a mess.
You know, and she didn't play anything on the level that Chloe Moretz right. is playing. Now, I mean, childhood stars do have a history of sinking into some seedy activities as they grow up, and some of them are able to get through it, you know, without falling into that. And I would hope that Chloe Moretz is able to. But I look at the work that Chloe Moretz has done, and you know, I hear what you're saying about aggressive, darker characters, and so on and so mm-hmm, forth. Mm-hmm. But what would you prefer, Hannah Montana?
You...
No, I don't think so. I think she's caught on to something. She's got a very strong following among comic book geeks and fans of movies such as Carrie and so on and so forth. I think it's a good direction for her to take. However, one of the things that she's going to be struggling with career-wise as the years do go on is she takes on too many of these roles.
Typecasting.
She probably needs to start looking at yeah. some diversification and jumping into what some people would consider to be normal roles or perhaps right. Some dramas, yeah. Comedies and stuff like that.
A couple of roles that I thought that were really good that were kind of outside, broke the mold for her and her career so far is her role in Hugo, which is really nice, you know, very kind of innocent, inquisitive young lady, and she had a brief stint on 30 Rock in a couple of episodes where she played this sort of ball-busting kick-ass like conniving daughter of a business of a an executive that outsmarts Jack Donaghy, who is Alec Baldwin's character on the show.
Yeah, she strikes me as a very smart girl, too. And she also... And she pulls that off on screen as well. Mm-hmm. Being able... Instead of being like a kid that's parroting lines...
Right, right.
You
right,
know, right. I think she, you know, she's injecting a bit of a personality into roles as well. And the thing that's interesting about Carrie is that Carrie is a very... when you cut down to it and get past all the horror aspects and the thriller aspects of the story and the mystery aspects, is that it's actually a very emotional tale about a girl. And, you know, it, just having a glance at that trailer visually, I'm impressed with what I've seen so far, and I'm looking forward to seeing the movie and seeing what she can do with the character. It would be interesting to see if she can bring the emotional impact that comes along with that role.
Mm-hmm.
It's an intense role. It's an intense character. And, you know, I applaud her for landing the part. I think the casting is fantastic. And, you know, I'm a fan of her work. I like what she's done so far, and I'd like to see more of what she can do.
Yep. I'm looking forward to it, too, for sure.
But I'm also a fan. Let me shift gears here and do a bit of a segue.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a big fan of the band that you're about to play for us. And just to give you a bit of trivia, Andy.
Yeah.
The lead man in this band makes his permanent residency in my home country.
Yes, that's true. Yes, we're talking about Ben Folds.
That's right.
Of the band Ben Folds Five, he became an Australian resident years ago. Moved over there.
It stemmed back from, well, obviously, first he loves the place, but secondly, he has had far more success musically in Australia than what he has in the United States. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why that is, because like Ben Folds, I've been a huge Ben Folds Five fan from the very beginning, from their first album. I've followed them for years, and they have a new album out called The Sound of the Life of the Mind, and this is their first album in 13 years.
Yeah, he got the fire back together. He's been doing a lot of solo projects and experiments over the years, and one of which is one of my favorites, actually, is the album he produced by William Shatner.
Oh, that's a great album. I have that album. That is a terrific album. Like, yes, he did a really good job with that, too, of making Bill Shatner sound really... I mean, it's basically like William Shatner sings Ben Folds music, you know?
Kind of, until you get to I Can't Get Behind That with featuring Henry Rollins, which is my favorite from the album.
Yeah.
You need to check that out if you haven't heard that already, because it's a really good song. But we're jumping way back into the past here. So why don't you tell us about this? Is this one of the new songs?
This is one of the new songs off the new album, Sound of the Life of the Mind. This song is called Draw a Crowd. And this is one that he's been playing live in concert for a little while, before he set to recording it for this album. And this is one of my favorites on the album, just because it's once again, you know, Ben Folds has a reputation of these great hooks and these catchy melodies and terrific rhythms, but also maintaining a kind of a cheeky, you know, sly sense of humor with it. And this and that perfectly describes this particular song called Draw a Crowd. So I'm going to play just a couple minutes of this song here. And you can see what I mean by the infectious kind of sound of it. So here we go. Without any further ado, here is Draw a Crowd by Ben Folds Five.
Damn. I ordered something. It took a while. This morning something was on my doorstep. What's this I'm holding? Time capsule order. Cause I'm a brand new man, and I don't think I want it. I don't think I want it. A row of flags hanging behind me. A garden of mics and crashes and photo flashes blind me.
I thought I was fine.
To find is what I call it. Oh, if you feel what's been raveled. Now in pretty phrases, it don't mean nothing. And I wanna sell them, I sing the line again. So smooth you can hear the beard, so smooth you can hear the beard. Three times is poetry, so smooth you can hear the beard.
So there
I
you
hope,
go.
I hope you're going to leave that little blooper in the show. That's timing. Brilliant timing.
So that's just a tiny little snippet of Draw a Crowd, or we as the
Dicks on a Wall.
Yes. Or Dicks on a Wall is the unofficial title before it was set to before it was recorded on this album. But yeah, I just love, like, to me, this hearing this album sounds like the whole band had been placed inside a time capsule for 13 years and then just kind of unlocked, because it sounds just so much like their last, like they haven't changed at all, which is a good thing in this case. Normally I would say, you know, with bands, that would be a bad thing, because you'd consider them like stale or unevolved, but this is definitely a good thing in the case of Ben Folds Five. And just
I would disagree with that the stale comment there, Andy. I think there's only so much evolution a band can do before they create their own identity. I mean, you wouldn't want Black Sabbath, for example, to go out and sound like Def Leppard.
This is true.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and I wouldn't want Ben Folds or Ben Folds Five to go out on stage and sound like, I don't know, Elton John or Billy Joel. I mean, they've got their own identity, and, you know, I think it's the only natural progression to stay within the confines of that identity. And that identity is fairly much, along with, as far as the Five is concerned, I would say about 95% Ben Folds.
For sure. It's interesting that you should mention Elton John and Billy Joel, because you can definitely hear that those are some major influences on Ben Folds' music. Mm-hmm. And just like, anytime I hear Ben Folds, I get so angry because I'm so jealous. I wish that I could combine chords the way he does, play piano the way he does. It's just a consummate professional, the way he puts sounds together. It's just so.
He's also an incredible improv artist as well. I don't know if you've seen the videos online, but when he did a tour about two or three years ago, he did a little segment in the tour where he connected to the internet on the big screen, went on to Chat Roulette, and started doing improv songs about people he would come across on Chat Roulette live on stage.
Yeah, I did see that. There was a another guy online who would be doing the same thing, and that guy, I can't remember that guy's name, but he, a lot of people had thought that guy was actually Ben Folds, because he had kind of the same sort of like chord structures in his improv bits, and he kind of looked a little bit like Ben Folds. And I remember there was one night when Ben Folds was touring, and he actually got that other guy on his show on Chat Roulette, and they would have basically like a duet, like a playoff. he's just brilliant. Ben Folds is just brilliant. Anyway, so that's
will be going down in the history of rock and roll as, you know, one of the finest artists and most memorable artists of all time, in my mind.
Yep. Absolutely. That's the fourth studio album from them, called The Sound of the Life of the Mind. And that song is called Draw a Crowd, or Dicks on a Wall, if you will. So tell us about the story that you decided to choose for from Geeks of Doom.
one of the most controversial stories or developments in the world of horror fans that has been coming up and down for quite some time now, several years in fact, is that the classic horror movie, The Evil Dead, is being remade into a new movie, a 2013 film. And it's a lot of people have been questioning this because we are living in a world of franchise extensions and franchise remakes and franchise reboots and adaptations. There's a study done by a fan of film who published his results at reddit.com, which doesn't sound very academic, but it stands to reason that there has been a decline on the amount of original movies that are not adaptations or remakes or reboots, over the last few decades. Mm-hmm. And of course, the reason for that is because it brings the almighty buck into Hollywood. Andy, I'm sure you agree with me on that.
Yeah.
So the concern that fans have, because there's an element of reverence that horror fans have on Evil Dead, and part of it has to do with Sam the King Raimi being the helmsman of the original Evil Dead projects. Other aspects have to do with the fact that Bruce Campbell is a fucking legend. And the other aspect is that Ash is such a memorable character. Sure. That, we haven't seen very much success in terms of remaking movies with remade characters over the recent years. You know, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, not so good efforts compared to the originals.
Yeah.
And so there's been a lot of concern over the remake of Evil Dead.
Well, I think
and,
if I'm interrupting
you for
a second.
At the same time, there's a lot of question as to how this is actually going to pan out. Yes, we know Evil Dead is about a bunch of teens. They end up stopping at a cabin in the woods, and there are zombies and deadites and evil creatures and supernatural horror, blood, gore, blah, stuff going on.
Yeah.
That's the general formula. But there's a lot of reverence placed on that. And so there's a lot of rumor going around as to what this new remake is all about.
Right.
There is one story saying that it's a genuine remake of the original, but there's another one that is that it is a remake, but it kind of isn't. And in some ways it may be set in an alternative universe and Bruce Campbell has a role in it somehow.
Let me just interrupt you for a second here. And I want to say that, that I think that the reason why the Evil Dead series has maintain that sense of reverence, unlike the Jason or Freddy or even Michael Myers, is that Sam Raimi has, kept control of that property through up until this point. And unlike the other horror movie villains whose films have gone off to who knows who, the properties have been diluted by other directors or other people who've taken over the properties and really didn't maintain the spirit of the original. Whereas Sam Raimi has kept a close lock on Ash and the Evil Dead property up until this point. And I can understand the concern of a lot of people, a lot of fans of the Evil Dead series, now that this property is going into somebody else's hands, another director with another star. Who knows what Ash's Bruce Campbell's involvement is going to be, if any.
Well, what we do know so far is that Sam Raimi has written the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
That's been rewritten by a couple of people. We do know that Sam Raimi is also signed on as producer, as has Bruce Campbell. The cast list at IMDb does not list a character called Ash,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting to me because that lends a little bit of credence to the rumor that it is a remake, but it's going to cross over with the Ash universe and Ash is going to come into it somehow. Don't know how, but it's probably going to happen. Let's see here. It doesn't actually... The director is Fede Alvarez,
mm-hmm.
Who has directed a lot of shorts from Mexico, it looks like.
According to Stoogipedia, was handpicked to helm the remake by Sam Raimi himself.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. So, well, it's going to be... It's going to be interesting to see how they go with this. But, you know, the general formula of an Evil Dead movie is the same. They end up in a cabin in the woods. There's a Book of the Dead, the Necronomicon there. Mm-hmm. They start reading shit from it, and demons come out, and shit happens. You know?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, what it's going to look like. Anyway, all of this rambling comes down to what I'm about to say, and that is I got to see a bootleg version of the trailer over the weekend.
Oh, really?
And I was absolutely floored. This thing looks spectacular. It looks like it is what Sam Raimi would come out with in 2013 with an Evil Dead film. I think it's in very good hands.
Okay. Looking up a little bit about Fede Alvarez, I realize that this is the same guy who a few years ago did a... short called Panic Attack in his native Uruguay where he did basically he pulled a remember that guy who did that movie Sky Captain
this is the one with all the freaking giant robots that came out of nowhere, right?
Yes.
I don't remember that.
He basically did the same thing that the guy who did Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow did. He did a short with a hell of a lot of after effects work on it to give the impression that Montevideo, the capital of Uruguay, was being attacked by giant robots, and that was probably enough to impress Sam Raimi that this was the guy for the job.
Anyway, just to wrap up, I have seen the trailer. I'm very impressed, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of this particular film as time goes on. And I know that I have often spoken with disdain over remakes and that, and it's very odd that you're listening to an episode of the Geeks of Doom Roundup where I'm advocating two remakes. Kind of hard to believe, but maybe hell has frozen over. I will draw your attention to two articles that got posted at Geeks of Doom over this week. One is the coverage from Stoogipedia over at from New York Comic Con 2012 with Bruce Campbell dominating the Evil Dead panel, and a photo posted by Empress Eve at geeksofdoom.com that features the new image from... that was released from Entertainment Weekly of the shot from the movie.
The Deadite
and
under the
header image is actually from the original Evil Dead. So you can kind of scroll up and down and compare the two. And you can see with the new look they're going for the modern feel of a horror film.
Right.
But at the same time, they're staying close to that iconography.
They certainly are.
I am out with the original Evil Dead. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing what Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell will come up with this time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there we go. On to different media. Andy, you've got an article, or rather a video, I originally looked at for my trailer selection this week. Unfortunately, it's got no dialogue yet.
Yes, so. I'm not going to be playing the trailer, the video, but I will be talking about it because there's really nothing. There's nothing in there to... nothing in there that lends itself to an audio only podcast, unfortunately.
Right,
but it's a new trailer for the video game Halo 4, the upcoming video game Halo 4, part of the Bungie Microsoft franchise, the Halo franchise. And this trailer is directed by a man named Tim Miller, who was the visual effects artist who did amongst his credits are the opening credits, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Remember that whole black oil opening credit sequence where it looks like everything is drenched in black oil? And it's all like computer generated, but it looks so realistic, like just images from the film, but all drenched in black oil. The trailer is produced by David Fincher, who directed Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and the trailer features Master Chief, the hero of the Halo series, in some sort of interrogation room, and during the painful process, we see glimpses of Master Chief's life from a first-person point of view. We also get a glimpse of the new enemy who has been described as an ancient evil. The visual effects in the trailer are pretty spectacular and should serve as some sort of footing if anyone should decide to revisit turning this game into a movie. This is an article on Geeks of Doom by Ilya. It's Mike J. Lee, backwards. I can't pronounce the name, but that's what it is, basically.
From Bizarro World.
Yes, it's the Bizarro World Mike J. Lee. So check out his article and check out the video. It just, you know, just seeing this video makes me sad that they never got a Halo movie off the ground, because, man, that would have been...
I was extremely impressed with it because the visual effects in that particular video...
Yeah.
You could not tell where real effects and costume work ended and the CGI began.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? It's so layered so well with real effects and CGI effects that, you know, even at some point, some of the actual human characters, the actors, I was even questioning now, is that a CGI person they've got there? Yeah. Or is, wow, this is incredible. Quite impressive work. And so it would be interesting to see if Microsoft uses this to pimp out the idea for the inevitable eventual Halo movie.
Yep.
On Halo note, Andy, I just sent you a link in the chat, and I don't know if we're going to feature this on a future episode of the Roundup, or save it for then, or play it now, or whatever. But our good buddy Eric Calderon, the guitar god on YouTube that we have featured here on the show in the past, his most recent contribution to his music playlist on YouTube is actually Halo.
Oh, nice.
He uses the Halo theme.
Nice.
So people can check that out. Actually, I'll probably put that in the show notes so people can have a look at that too.
You figured that he would have gotten to that eventually, right?
Oh, yeah. He says in there, says in his comments that I've been getting this request for a long, long time now. And I figured with the new one coming out, it's about time to finally do it.
Yeah.
So we'll probably feature that on a future.
Yeah. We've featured his work on quite a bit on past episodes of the Roundup.
Yeah, indeed.
So, Greg, what's going down on Social Blend?
Well, the most recent episode of Social Blend, and no doubt we'll be crossing over with a couple of things here, Andy. The headline for us was the Violent Acres and Gawker drama going on at Reddit.
That was our headline too. Now, on the drill down.
You're going to have a lot more to say about that with your recent drill down episode. I did listen to your episode,
listened to what you had to say about Violent Acres on Social Blend as well. I almost wish that I had your hosts, because they seem to agree with my line of thinking more than my co-hosts did with my.
Yeah, the interesting situation you had was, you had your perspective, and then you had Tom Cheridar on the show, who was coming from a journalism perspective.
Yeah.
You know, and so naturally, there's going to be some clashing there of ideology in that. My take on the whole thing is that everyone involved are douchebags.
Right. Well, that was my. Can I read this little quote? I want to read this quote that I read on the air, but it like so perfectly to me, like summed up the whole affair. It's just a brief one. It's from the law blog Pope Hat, and he says the guy who wrote this, Ken on Pope Hat, says that. Here we go. Oh. In a fight between Frick and Frack, we can recognize that Frick is an asshole without diminishing our ability to recognize that Frack is an asshole. Is Gawker hypocritical when it expresses outrage about creepers? Yes. Gawker is, in fact, full of people who are relentlessly creepifying about women and kids and sex. Our ability to recognize that is not diminished by recognizing and calling out that Reddit has been busting pedophile, creeper, and bigot communities worthy of contempt. We can think both things at once. Let me put it this way. I would not let the moderators and fans of the Reddit creeper forums around my daughters. I'd worry that they would sexually assault the girls. I don't worry about Gawker writers and editors molesting my girls. However, if my girls were molested, I'd expect Gawker writers and editors to try and find ways to monetize it, use it to drive traffic, come up with banal, weakly, ironic, hipster douchebag quips about it, pay witnesses to offer lurid details about it, and try and find clumsy and demi-literate ways to connect it to politicians they don't like. I just thought that was a brilliant summary of the whole situation.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty concise. But I just, you know, essentially what it came down to for me, from my perspective, is that everyone that had fingers pointed at them over this whole thing, including Violet Akers, they're douchebags.
Yeah.
The Reddit moderators, yeah, and even Reddit themselves, the administrators. Really, when you think about it, when you cut down to the fine point, they were the ones that did allow NSFW content on their site without effectively having a desire to police it.
Right,
and,
right.
And, you know, so it stretches back to them, and it's just an all... No one looks good in this situation. Yeah. No one. It's just, you know, everybody involved in this party slept in the same bed and they collectively shat it. That's what happened. Yeah. And so we did cover that. Jeremy Rosen from formerly of Roadrunner Records joined us on the show, and he had a few opinions about the whole thing. And he you know, totally respect his point of view on the whole thing as well. And he brought up a lot of valid points about the situation. While he was on the show, he told us about his new venture. He's going to be part of a new company, or not necessarily a new company, they've been around for a while, but his new job is going to be working with a company called The Orchard, which is one of the biggest digital distributors of music online.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what they do is, for those who don't know, is did you ever wonder how record labels and bands are able, like the big guys, get their music on iTunes and Amazon and all the other places? It's because of places like The Orchard. They're the ones that actually set up the distribution channels to get the music from the record labels to the iTunes, to the Amazons, et cetera, et cetera. And he talked about some of the new projects that they have got coming up as well. We also talked a little Kiss as well. Kiss have got a new album out called Monster.
What?
But the interesting thing that we didn't really focus too much on the album itself, but rather some of the controversies that came out of it. And one was an interview that went wrong featuring Paul Stanley and Tommy Thayer from Kiss on a Houston radio station. We've got the clip at social-blend.com if you want to have a listen to it.
A Kiss interview going wrong? That's impossible.
No, it's quite an interesting little clip. And, you know, douchebags all around again, you know.
Did you ever hear the interview with the Fresh Air interview with Gene Simmons?
Yes.
Talk about a car wreck.
Well, you know, he walks into that stuff all the time, doesn't he? I mean, that's just Gene, you know. He's always been that way. And what do you do?
What do you do? Yeah.
What do you do? But the other thing interesting related to that is that a new war of words have fired up between Paul Stanley from Kiss and Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Steven Tyler stating that Kiss are nothing but a superhero comic book band, and Paul Stanley quipping back and saying that Steve Tyler needs a reality check. And that he watched people walked out of their show, so or whatever. It's just a like a, you know, bitches just, being bitches, yeah, in other words.
Yeah, I mean, if it comes down to Aerosmith versus Kiss, that it's like watching two old men beat each other up with canes and walkers. I mean, come on.
But it's the same thing like with Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin, yeah, when you think about it. They're both formative of the metal genre.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have preference for one and not the other. But to, you know, they're completely different from each other, but they both contributed quite a bit to the history of metal. And it's the same thing with Aerosmith and Kiss as well. Anyway, this week coming up on Social Blend, we are going to do a Halloween special. I don't know how that's going to pan out, but we're going to do it. One of the ongoing stories that we've been covering on Social Blend, both on last week's episode and we'll be featuring, focusing on it this week as well, is the world of Pedo Bear. And by the world of Pedo Bear, I'm not actually talking about the little cartoon bear that you've seen floating around in memes and on 4chan. Right. I'm actually talking about the real nasties out there that are real pedophiles and so on. Mm-hmm. And the main person we're zoning in on and focusing on on this is a character from England called Jimmy Savile. And Jimmy Savile, for Americans that don't know about him, a lot of the English people out there and some Doctor Who fans might know of this person from some of the DVD special features as well on classic Doctor Who. Jimmy Savile was a man that hosted a children's show called Jim'll Fix It. And basically the situation behind that was like, you know, a kid would send a letter to Jim and Jim would come out and fix it. And the kid would come out and say, "Oh, Jim, my family is very poor and we can't afford pencils for me to go to use at school." And Jim
sounds
will
like
come out and fix
Bob
it.
The Builder.
"No, Jim, I've lost my fucking leg." You know, and Jim will come out and he'll fix it somehow. You know, that's what he did. And so one of the common scenes was that they would end up in children's hospitals and, you know, Jimmy Savile would do something charitable. But then the cameras would go off and while they're in the children's hospital, you know, he'd stick his hand down the sheets of these, you know, little kids and, you know, fiddle with them.
Oh, my goodness. Well...
You know, and the BBC turned a blind eye to this this action. Now, the guy died earlier this year, and we're just following up on the news that comes out on this. So we're going to continue covering that on Social Blend as well as our regular segments, What the Fuck Stories of the Week, Countdown to the Guts Fuck of Humanity, and much more. And what's going on with the drill down, mate?
Well, this last drill down, as we've previously discussed here, we did drill down. I mean, our main topic was the whole Violent Acres / Gawker / Reddit admin situation and how that the many different questions about the rights of anonymity and rights to privacy that brought up. But we also,
Andy, just to interrupt you there as well, one of the things I forgot to mention, and I'm surprised that you guys did not cover this on the drill down, but did you happen to see the subreddit Circle Jerk when all this stuff was going down?
I did not. See, that's why I didn't check.
It was brilliant. They ripped off.
Yeah.
You know how all these subreddits were banning Gawker submissions, right? Circle Jerk did the complete opposite thing. They ripped off the CSS design of... all the Gawker sites and applied it to their Circle Jerk subreddit, changed the logo to look like the Gawker logo and changed all the self-posts so that they would go to Gawker sites.
Sneaky.
They went with the complete opposite and I thought that was quite amusing. Anyway.
Yeah, no. Beyond that, we also covered the announcements by Microsoft of both Windows 8 packaging and pricing and the Microsoft Surface RT pricing, which was a big question that had been hanging for a long time since they showed off the Surface, is how much is it going to cost? Is it going to be an iPad killer? And the on the low end, it's priced between $499 and $699, which is fairly competitive for what it is. And we'll have to see when it comes out if people bite in large enough numbers to actually make the Surface and Windows 8 a viable new option for people. We also discussed Apple's announcement of the upcoming iPad Mini. It was an announcement for a special event in which we assume that there will be the iPad Mini announced. And a
excuse
tiny
me, my dog's really
dog.
Happy about that news.
And we also covered SNL in the last week. Did a sketch that pits the iPhone factory workers against the whiny tech critics who complain about first world problems essentially involved with the iPhone 5. Coming up on the drill down, I'm actually not sure that we're going to have an episode this week because I've got a lot of work stuff coming on. So my real life is actually getting in the way of the show. But if we do, it'll certainly be the most up to date topics, tech topics. And if it's not this week, it'll be the following week. And once again, up to date tech topics. So that is our show coming up. And I think that's it, right?
Yeah, my dogs have got some contributions to make. Well, dogs talking in. What are you doing? See? There you go. That's it. We've got Social Blend. You can get Social Blend at social-blend.com. And on the iTunes, we have a subreddit and the Facebookeries. We record Wednesday nights and publish on Thursdays.
Yes.
And when can people catch the Drill Down, mate?
Drill Down is every Friday on geeksofdoom.com. You can find that on Geeks of Doom and go to iTunes and or Stitcher and search for Geeks for the Drill Down, and you can find our show via that way. Subscribe to us on Stitcher and iTunes, and you'll just get it automatically in your MP3 player. So that's it for this episode of the Roundup for this week. We will see you next week, I'm guessing, I'm hoping.
Yep.
And outside of that, there's only one thing left to say. Dilly gaff.
Hey, the dog said it. Look at that. Yeah.